Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the DTF Podcast. It is the Doster, T.O. and Phantom Podcast. It is currently Tuesday morning, 9:28 in the a.m. Eastern Standard Time, the only legitimate time zone. Fancy and I are getting ready to head to the Jimmy V Classic tonight. We're going to do a show from, I guess we're actually going to be in the upper deck, Fanta. They're not letting us down on the court for Madison Square Garden. They're going to be changing over that arena. They got a Knicks game on Wednesday night, I guess, so they got to get that thing flipped over. But we will be there. It will be me. It will be you. It will be Jeff Goodman. It'll be John Henson. T.O., unfortunately, is not going to be able to meet us up there. But I'm excited about it. Before we get into that, it was a wild weekend in college hoops, fellas. It was a wild weekend. How we doing? How we feeling?
Everything's good. It was a wild weekend, and we're learning a lot about teams that we had an inkling. We had some doubts, but I think for the most part, like teams are starting to figure each other out. I feel like we're going to talk about North Carolina a little bit. They're eventually going to get it because, I mean, they have – we've seen them do it in the past, so you wonder when exactly it's going to come. I think there's some structural issues there, but – everywhere else, I mean, great weekend of basketball and another good week of basketball coming up. That warm-up week is certainly over, and the last 2-3 weeks have been as good as advertised.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think anybody in the past week embodies the parity that college basketball is in and the times that we're in, where even though we are about a month into the season, there's still so much to be figured out. There's no team that embodies that more than Baylor. Because Baylor at the front end of last week didn't even look like a top 25 team and lost by 26 to Marquette. It was stunning to watch that play out. And it was really the way the week started. It's like, oh, just when you think, you know, wait a minute, what's going on? And then the Bears come back 3 nights later at the Sanford Pentagon and their defense comes back and they defended their tails off and they beat Gonzaga. That was a really impressive response by Scott Drew's team because we all were pretty high on them. And I thought that Keontae George played very well against Gonzaga and he just keeps on keeping on like we thought he could. So for me, I look at Baylor and I think, man, it's interesting. I look at the waves that Kentucky's had early in this season, just because they entered Sunday in London against Michigan. They had to win that game. And guys, Cason Wallace isn't just one of the best freshmen. He's one of the best players in the country. So there are takeaways across the board. I think if there's one takeaway among all of them, it is this. You cannot overreact to any one night in this sport and make your firm judgment on a team at this stage, because it's showing. And I think some of the top teams are going to take losses. It wouldn't surprise me, as we do this podcast, if Texas lost to Illinois. It wouldn't surprise me if Purdue loses a couple in a row in the Big Ten. That's life in college basketball. It's a good thing, guys. How many teams could win the national championship? I would say double digits as I talk to you today.
That's a high number.
Parity's
great. I do want to push back on one thing, though. You said that we can't overreact to things that happen to every every damn thing that I see, baby. That is what I do. It's why we have the the Tuesday overreactions podcast this week. We couldn't do it yesterday. But yeah, look, there's a lot to get into and a lot of ground that I want to cover. So we're just going to jump straight into it. I want to know, Tio, let's start with this. North Carolina, Gonzaga were two of the top 3 to 5 teams in the country, depending on where you looked heading into the season. Creighton, most people had them somewhere in and around like the top 10 to top 15. Gonzaga has lost 3 games this season, struggled with Kent State last night, 2 of their last 3 coming into last night. North Carolina has now lost 4 in a row. Creighton has now lost 3 in a row. How concerned are you about these groups? Are any of them, is this just a blip? Is this just trying to figure things out? Is this just something that happens in November and December? Or have you significantly readjusted your opinion on any of those 3?
Carolina is the one that we kind of saw this coming, right? Like we knew that they caught lightning in a bottle last year in the NCAA tournament, and they have guys that can score. But the problem is they're not passing the ball to anybody. They think they can do it all themselves. And the weird part about this whole situation is kind of the exact same thing as last year. We're seeing the real Carolina now. Like I said, caught lightning in a bottle. Brady Manick was really good, if nothing else, because he was a ball mover. You know, he didn't just make shots. As soon as he caught it, he either got rid of it or made something happen without the basketball. There's nobody on that team that does that right now. Pete Nance is so frustrated right now. He's trying to take it one-on-one. Like, that's where this Carolina team is. Are they going to figure it out? I would guess they do. But, I mean, that's 3 in a row, right? Like, I just – functionally, like, that team just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But for that matter, guys, they didn't last year. That's the thing that kind of scares me the most. Like, are they going to limp into the NCAA tournament as a 6-7-8 seed? And that's what it kind of looks like if they're able to get it together enough in the conference. So that's a team that scares me. Carolina, they are who they are. They have some guys that can turn a game on its head individually. It's just there was a point 24 and a half minutes into the game against Virginia Tech in Blacksburg, they had 2 assists.
Yep.
Guys, it might as well have been 2 passes. Like, they just don't pass the ball to each other. They don't trust each other. And then on a team where Hubert Davis needs to gather his and gain some depth, like, the guys on the floor don't trust that depth. So, like, you have a two-edged sword right there. There's a lot going on. Gonzaga, not necessarily worried about, just because.
But let's stay on North Carolina real quick, because Fant, I want to toss this to you for a second. All right. So here's what North Carolina has done in those last 4 losses. They lost by 5 to an Iowa State team that ranks top 40 on KenPom, and that I think is probably going to end up being an NCAA tournament team. Might be a 10 seed, might be an 11 seed, but I think they're going to dance. They lost by 2 on a neutral court in 4 overtimes to an Alabama team that's top 15 on KenPom right now. They lost at Indiana by 12. Indiana's top 10. I don't think there's any shame in losing on the road to a program like Indiana in a building as loud and as crazy as Assembly Hall is right now for a game that's that big. And they lost by 8 on the road at Virginia Tech. They cut a 16-point deficit to 3 in the second half, and they did not have Armando Bacot in that game. So I think it's fair to say the sky isn't completely falling. Like, it's not like they're losing to Gardner Webb. It's not like they got upset by James Madison. These are good teams that they're losing to, but they just, it's not clicking. And they're it's basically the same thing that they were in March last year, but instead of Caleb Love dropping 27 and a half, he has 6 turnovers and 1 assist in a game. Right. So is this just a result of they're doing the stuff that they were doing last year, they're just not doing it very well? Or is there more of a structural flaw within this team without like a Brady Manek, as T.O. said?
Well, I think that there are two pieces to this situation with North Carolina. Number one is the mental piece of reaching the national championship game last year. And within these games, I'm watching their body language out of timeouts. And the body language that I sense is, we got this. We got this. Like, we got it. No, you don't. You don't. You haven't defended a lick. You've been soft on the defensive end of the floor. You let Indiana, you gave up 77 points to Indiana. They hit three threes in the game. They went 3 for 13 from three. They're a bad three-point shooting team, Indiana. And you let them get in the lane. And I've been watching Carolina's body language on these timeouts and after games. And apparently Hubert Davis out in Portland was very optimistic, was actually happy with the Alabama game. I'm not sure if that's a front by him, but the fact of the matter is this: if they were not a blue blood or their name was not Carolina, we wouldn't be talking much about them right now because of the fact that they have not been able. At some point, you got to beat somebody. At some point, you got to beat somebody. Now, the other piece of it is that they are a disconnected team, but they're an all-or-nothing style. They're an all-or-nothing style. So I do think that there are similarities with last year in that regard, because when you have guards who are so up and down, and it's as explosive as they can be, is as bad as it can turn for them, guard play, point guard play, hit the button. For it to be successful, you've got to be able to make things happen with the basketball for others around you. And this team is not playing together. They're not playing connected. But also the loss of Manek is not just a significant loss, but the fact is that Carolina at times only has three major offensive threats on the floor. Their other complementary pieces aren't great offensive players. They're just not. So they are who they are in that regard. They're not a deep team, guys. At least I don't think that they are. And maybe he needs to figure out a way to develop that a little bit. But the fact is, you can't welcome back the players that they welcome back and go on a four-game skid like they've gone on here. So I think that they could correct some problems? Yes. Do I think they're as bad as people are saying they are? I don't think that, but I don't think you can catch lightning in a bottle twice in the NCAA tournament. This sport is too unforgiving for that to be the case again. I could see this being a year, guys, and we'll talk about this way down the road, where Carolina wins their first NCAA tournament game come March. And everybody and their mother goes, here we go. It's another Carolina run. Only for them to run into someone in the second round and be like, not this time. That's the NCAA tournament. Because at some point, guys, like the lack of assists, the lack of defensive ability, there's things there that to me, I don't think that the body language of we'll figure this out, we've got this, that's not how college basketball works. And frankly,
you mentioned, I want to make a point on that. You mentioned body language. Like, do these guys like each other? Is this just kind of, maybe I'm reading too much into it, but it always looks like Caleb Love is grumpy, doesn't
it?
That's just him.
I don't see that with some of the other guys, but like there needs to be some sort of sense of urgency. Like we'll figure it out. We'll figure it out. Well, you're 5-4, like, and you're North Carolina. Like, North Carolina should beat Iowa State. North Carolina should at least have it close in Blacksburg. Like, Blacksburg's a tough place. But, like, you should have it close. Indiana, you go there, it should be – it was not – to me, like, that game was never really in question because the effort's just not there. Like, they're exactly. not even close. Like, against
that's,
Alabama –
that's the big thing. It was the effort to me. Like, there's – it's not – to me, it's not just that, like, they're shooting too much. They're not passing the ball. Like, there's different things every game, right? Like, they didn't expect Iowa State playing a 1-3-1 zone, and Iowa State plays a lot of that one. They throw junk defenses at you. That's a problem. Hubert said they never played that before in the post game press conference.
That's his issue. That's
Not true.
Against
we've seen defensive issues that they've had this season, right? We saw an effort issue against Indiana. So there's like 19 different things that are going. It's not like one problem where you say, yeah, you know what? Caleb Love, he just hasn't been shooting the ball well. That's the issue, right? Or they're just not getting stops. That there's like 17 different problems with this North Carolina team.
Am I crazy for do you guys recognize that though? Like if you look at their facial expressions, I don't know if they like each other or not, but like I do get the sense that in their minds, and I'm sure this is what they're thinking right now in their facility, we made our run last year when everybody conned us out. That's where we're at our best. Like you, I'm sorry. The run they went
on in North Carolina.
They're
arrogance?
Taking early. That's what it is. They're tanking. You know what it is?
It's Carolina arrogance. It's Carolina arrogance is what you're talking about.
But yeah. I sense that a little bit. I sense that we're going to get this right. But the fact is, not just that's what I sense. I mean, that just watching them. I watched them last week at Indiana, and Baycott with like 5 minutes left to go in the game is like talking with somebody on the team, and they're sort of laughing in the free throw line. It's like, you are down by six right now. You still have a chance in this game. Let's go. Like, where's that urgency? And not just the Iowa State defense. How about the fact, like, have you never seen Trace Jackson Davis get an entry pass inside? You know what's going to happen in single man coverage? He's going to finish. He's going to hit. They let TJD get easy catches late in that game. They let Xavier Johnson get into the lane. Their defense on dribble penetration right now is not good. And that to me is a lack of effort and urgency because guys, do they have enough talent? They got enough. Yeah. They got enough to beat Virginia Tech and Iowa State. Their defense, it's a sub 50 defense in KenPom. And there's a reason for it. They're not defending.
Mm-hmm. When effort is into question, whose fault is that?
To me, it's the players. You shouldn't need a coach to teach you.
You should not need a coach
to push you hard.
No, there's no defense of the. It's not the players. It's not the players. It's the coaching staff. If effort is your issue, it's the coaching staff. 1,000%. It's not even close. Not even up for debate. What is acceptable in terms of effort is an issue. It is the coaching staff.
Okay,
it is not the players.
That's fair. So what you're basically saying, if guys aren't trying hard
you
enough,
yank
they
them. You're 5-4. You're not lighting the world on fire. You're 5-4. You better play somebody who plays hard at least. Like right now is lesson taking time. You're in the non-con. You're Carolina. You're going to get the benefit of the doubt with the NCAA tournament. You need to teach some lessons to these guys who don't really feel like playing all that damn hard. All this stuff, damn pissing them off. Make them play hard at least, and the rest of the shit will handle itself.
I don't think you can.
They have to play hard.
No, I got you, but I think it's very difficult to blame Hubert Davis for saying, "Well, we don't have
very easy to blame Hubert Davis for them not playing hard."
We don't have a bench, but also the only guys that we have that are good are dogging it. Like it's a tough spot to be in.
What are you talking about? They don't have a bench. Okay, so what are you talking about? We don't have a bench. DeMarco Dunn was a top 100 kid. Seth Trimble was a top 100 kid. Dontre Styles, a top 100 kid. Tyler Nickel, top 100 kid. Yeah. Puff Johnson, he's not that level of guy. I'll give you that. But the rest of them, those are top 100 kids. Those are Carolina worthy. If nothing else, they're ACC worthy and able to play hard. Whose fault is it that they're not playing hard? Hubert Davis's. It is his fault. Like,
I love that T.O.'s gotten on here and has already slandered them for their Carolina arrogance, and now he just tried to fire Hubert Davis right here on the spot. That's
I've been saying for a long time that I've been hesitant about Hubert because I think it's too easy going. There's some point you got to stick a foot in somebody's ass and get them to play hard. You're 5-4. You've lost four in a row. Something good's got to happen. Enough is enough. Like, it's crazy. They play Georgia Tech next. If that Georgia Tech game is close, there's real problems. There's a real problem.
Georgia Tech is bad.
Georgia Tech is not good. All right. Gonzaga, Creighton, real quick. Fanta, who are you more concerned about out of those two?
It's still Gonzaga. And the reason is the guard play. I find it ironic that on Monday night, on a night where Kent State had Gonzaga on the ropes, the Golden Flash, it's credit to Rob Senderoff's team, had given Houston and Gonzaga all they could handle, but just weren't able to finish it off. that on the night that Gonzaga does escape and beat Kent State, Andrew Nembhard goes for 31 points, 13 assists, 9 rebounds for the Pacers. They miss Andrew Nembhard in a big way. They just don't have enough great guard play. And from night to night, Timmy's going to do Timmy. They've got an All-American, so you've got a shot. But it's the classic example of year of the big or not. You got to have backcourt play be a consistent force for your team to win. I think that Creighton, they made the Maui Invitational Championship game. The win over Arkansas was as impressive of a game that I've seen between two teams all year, and they won that game. And to me, they're not right offensively. I think that Greg McDermott can figure that out. I don't think Creighton has a personnel problem. I think Gonzaga has a personnel problem in their backcourt in that they're a good team. They're a good team. Like, don't get me wrong. Both Creighton and Gonzaga are a good team. But you ask me who am I more concerned about. I'm more concerned about Gonzaga because I just don't think it's clicking with Nolan Hickman. And Malachi Smith went 1-for-6 last night. Chattanooga or not, it's been a transition for him. Rasir Bolden, I don't know what I'm getting from night to night. And Julian Strother needs to be that guy. But we'll see. There's a level of unknown with Gonzaga personnel-wise that I still don't have with Creighton. Creighton got their butts kicked on Sunday. And I thought that was some after effect from playing in the Maui final against Arizona. Then you play Texas. And so mentally, you're just burned. You're burned. And they lost. They tried to force the issue. They might have taken Nebraska lightly, thinking we'll beat them. They didn't. I think Mark Few and Greg McDermott are great coaches. But when you've got the ingredients in your kitchen versus not necessarily having them in the other, I'm sorry, one batch of cookies is going to be better than the other.
I think I'm more worried about Creighton, to be honest. Because the issue we saw last year was this. They couldn't shoot the ball well enough, right? They were 10 for 40 from three against Nebraska. And if you go back and watch the film, what Nebraska did was they just clogged the paint. They just said, you're not getting to the
rim. They went under. They went under screen. Like it was,
they went under screens. When Nembhard was coming off of screens, they had two guys tagging off. They were like, you want to give the ball to Kaluma and let him shoot? Go ahead. You want to kick the ball out? Let him shoot? Go ahead. You want to let Trey Alexander shoot threes? Go ahead. We want him shooting catch and shoot threes. And they were 10 for 40 against Texas. I think, would they start 1-for-22 from beyond the arc, something like that?
Finished 4-for-27 in that game.
And that was the issue that they had last season with the same group of guys. And what do we hear all offseason? Arthur Kaluma, he's better than a 27% three-point shooter. Well, he's 9-for-37 this year. That is 24.3% from beyond the arc. He has to be better. Nembhard has to be better. And I am not entirely convinced that those guys are actually going to be better shooters because they weren't very good last year. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not like this is the team that shot 40% from three last season and they're just not making the open ones now. Teams are giving them the open ones and they're not going in. They took 65 shots against Nebraska. 40 of them were threes. I think we know what Fred Hoiberg wanted to do and what he was willing to give up.
Well, it's interesting. They went 7-for-14 from three against Arkansas in that win.
That's like, the Maui soft rims. And
They took
Maui soft rims.
They took 14. That's the big.
No, I got. Yeah, but that's the thing. Arkansas pulled out. The Arkansas defended on the perimeter. They gave us space.
Arkansas pulls out. Hey, let's say this. I think they're going to get it together. Farabella was a good shooter at his last stop. Like, you look at the rest of it, Baylor Shireman's shooting 37%. Like, that's 10 points lower than what he was last year.
Exactly.
Trey Alexander's 40. I don't worry about Creighton. And I almost – the Arizona game, they lost by two. I'm going to write that one off. That's just a loss because Arizona's good, and that's just a loss. They're still going to be fine there. Texas, that's the one that screws you. The because they got them playing so fast and so out of rhythm. Sometimes it takes a week for young people to slow themselves back down.
Yes. It's like facing an ace pitcher.
That's right. So it's like it takes a second because Texas gets you so wound up. Like what they're doing. Like if you turn that game on, there was a couple times like I everybody up for Creighton had their hands on their knees. Four out of the five Texas players had their hands on their knees, and they didn't stop. Like, it kept going and going. Like, it takes a second to slow yourself down. They're going to be able to slow themselves down against BYU a little bit. I just don't – I think they're going to be okay. Like, I think Creighton's going to be fine. The Texas game is the one that throws you for a loop, though, because they play such a fast-paced, frenetic thing. Like, you would see it, like, whenever you play pressing teams or teams that will pressure 94 feet for the entirety of a game, it's not just that game that throws you out of a sink. It's the next game, too. Because yes, sometimes, like, it takes a second to kind of recalibrate. So I'm willing to write this Nebraska thing off because they were still such in a hurry.
The only thing,
BYU, wait,
can I ask this? Can I ask you two this?
Yeah.
How many teams in college basketball would be favored to win at the Moody Center right now?
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
No,
I don't think anyone would be favored to win at the Moody Center right now.
No, I agree with that. That's
Texas is play. Texas is number two on KenPom right now, and they are very, very slightly behind Houston on KenPom right now.
Zero.
Like they wouldn't. No one would be favored to win at Texas.
By the way, I'm rooting for a Houston Texas game.
No one's going to win at. No one's going to be favored to win at Houston. No one's going to be favored to win at Tennessee. No one's going to be favored to win at UConn. No one's going to be favored to win at Kentucky. Right. Yeah. It's when you are a top 10 team in the country and you're playing at home, you're not going to be favored. No one's going to be favored to beat
at you. UConn. How about home? Nobody's going to be favored against UConn, period.
Yeah. So my thing with Creighton is I thought that they were like a top five team in the country. And now I'm like, yeah, they're probably more top 15. So they're still really good. It's just that if they're not making shots and that you can scheme them out of like into what they did against Nebraska, then I just think it kind of is what it is. All right. Let's flip over to the Big Ten because the Big Ten kind of got flipped on its head this weekend. Indiana went into Rutgers and lost. Illinois went into Maryland and lost. Wisconsin went into Marquette and beat a team that just gave 26 to Baylor, coming off of a loss at home to Wake Forest. It looks like Purdue was probably the favorite to win the conference. I'm like, what the hell is going on in this league, T.O.?
Purdue's really good, and then the rest of them, they're very similar. It's a very balanced conference. It's a very balanced conference. Rutgers is as tough a place, is a tough a team to play as anybody because they're just tough as shit, and they're going to figure out ways to just compete, and then they're there at the end, and then things are going to happen. Like, that's just what's going to happen. You look at the rest of the conference, Penn State is shooting the shit out of the ball. Iowa is going to Iowa. Like, I don't know what you want me to say here, Doster. I'm sitting here like it's a tough place, top to bottom, and it's going to be very balanced once again. The only team that I'm looking at, what is it, Michigan State is down towards the bottom in terms of KenPom. Like, that, what's up with that? Like, so is Illinois. Like, and those are teams that we're expected to be towards the top. It's a very balanced conference, and it's tough because it's so well scouted.
Yeah, the issue with Michigan State has everything to do with injuries and Madi Sissoko coming back to earth, right? Like, when you don't have Malik Hall and you don't have Jaden Akins and you didn't go out and recruit a whole bunch of people out of the portal and you already only had like nine guys and you didn't have a backup big guy, and now the guy that we thought was going to be a great big guy for you is like not anymore. It just kind of, you know, they're basically playing with six guys. Like, what are you going to do?
Hey, Fanta, we weren't wrong about Maryland last year. We were wrong about Turgeon last year.
Yes.
Ah.
We weren't wrong. We were wrong about Turgeon. We put too much into Turgeon.
Good work.
You put a hell of a coach with that bunch. Mm-hmm. Pretty good. We weren't wrong, Fanta. We weren't wrong.
And this should not come as a massive surprise. They're one of the surprises. And people are going to say Maryland's the biggest surprise because they are.
I picked them top five in the league on our very own DTF podcast Big Ten preview. You guys remember that, right? I went all in on Maryland. You guys are like, oh, no, what are you talking about? You're gonna have to wear a hot dog suit. Someone get this guy a chicken mask.
Kevin Willard has done a nice job in the preseason of really selling low, and then his team ends up outperforming that. That's when he's at his best, guys. If you look at his best teams at Seton Hall, he did better when his teams were sort of underranked and underselected and under the radar, and then they ended up coming on, playing with toughness and winning. So for me, guys, this is why the hire of Willard at Maryland made so much sense, because Seton Hall is a difficult job in college basketball, and he made them a consistent winner and did things the right way. He recruited well. He had such great X's and O's. That's never going to be a question. Now you hand him the keys to a program that at the end of the day is one of the great brands in college basketball, with a fan base that's just waiting. Look at the gold rush on Friday night against Illinois. They showed Maryland felt like Maryland again on Friday night. That's fun for college basketball.
People don't understand how good that environment is, okay? When Maryland's at their best, there's what, like, I think the Xfinity Center holds 16,000 people.
It is unreal in that.
There are students on both of the lengths of the court, about 10 rows of students, and then on the end where the visiting team shoots free throws after the game, it's a wall of students, right? They're loud. They're drunk. They cuss you out, right? They are so incredibly inappropriate that it's probably rated R just to go sit in that building, right? And go listen to them.
I have a great video of shutting them up, of somebody shutting them up. Great video.
Was it you that shut them up? Yes. Yeah, I could. Okay.
So it's a great place.
It's a great place. Let me tell you something. And they are good this year. Like, that to me, that was why I love this hire. And I don't mean to cut you off, Fanta, but like, you know that Willard is going to get his guys to play their balls off, right? They are going to play hard. They're going to play tough. And to your point about Hubert Davis, it's, you're not going to play if you're not playing hard as hell for Willard.
That's right.
And he also hired all the guys that's going to get him a bunch of talent out of the DMV area. And you know how much talent is in the DMV area. The last thing that I'll say is I had this conversation with someone the other day, and I was like, no one can accomplish what Willard accomplished at Seton Hall. And so they were like, what did he actually accomplish? And I said, making that program be consistently top 30, top 35 in the country, making that program get to 5 to 6 straight NCAA tournaments, making them a Big East contender right now in this day and age, in the arms race of all high major Division I college basketball programs, like that is not an easy thing to do. You got to understand what you're recruiting to, and you got to understand what that program is at this point right now. And the fact that he got them there should tell you everything you need to know about that group. And now that you gave him a program with all the facilities, with all the talent in the world, with all the what you want to recruit to, like he's gonna bring them back. I feel very strongly about that. And I felt very strongly about that before this started. That's why I said they were gonna be a top five team in the Big Ten. Fanta, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, they identified in the portal really well. And then they brought in Jameer Young and Don Carey. Those guys are not just really good players, but they're leaders, guys. I covered Don a little bit in his time at Georgetown. He was a part of that Big East tournament championship team that Georgetown. He was a huge reason for it. You know why? He showed up to the Garden that week and said, "We're going to win this thing. I'm going to lead us. I'm going to be a leader." He's a leader. Like he's a guy that steps up and makes things happen. Jameer Young came up huge in the Illinois game. But not just that, Kevin Willard inherited some quality talent, which is what T.O. was bringing up. We were buying into Maryland's talent. And Dante Scott's playing the best basketball of his career. Shouldn't be a surprise. Dante Scott's out. He is one of the matchup nightmares in college basketball.
Did you hear the story that
this is a great story.
Yeah, the story that Humble told on the broadcast.
I did not.
When Willard got there, like the first workout that he put Dante Scott through, he put a 25-pound weight vest on him. And he was like, you're going to go work out with this thing on. And like, obviously, by the end of the workout, he was like, I'm dead. This is really hard. Takes the weight vest off. And he's like, all right, now go try to move and see how good you feel. And he's like, yeah, I feel great right now. Feel bouncy. And Willard goes, now imagine if you lost 25 pounds that you need to lose, how good you'd feel every day. And that kind of like made it click for him. And now he's in the best shape of his life.
Is that Hummel who told that one?
Hummel told that
is a great story.
Yeah. Last thing I'll say, Donald Carey, Jameer Young, they're both shooting a combined like 25% from three right now. Carey is a career 38% three-point shooter, and Jameer Young is a career 36% three-point shooter. Yeah. Once those guys start making shots the way that they've made shots their entire lives, Maryland's going to take a step up to another level. I do want to ask you guys, the other surprise team is Purdue, right? Just how – we've talked a lot about them on the Field of 68, so I don't want to go like – too in-depth on it, just but I guess, TL, let's go to you first because you're the one that has strong opinions on the Big Ten. What is their ceiling, right? Are we kind of seeing them at their best right now? Do you think there's room to improve, or is just the kind of thing where, like, teams got to figure out what to do with Zach Edey, and it's very hard to figure out what the hell to do with him? I don't know. What's your take on this team?
I want to be very clear here. I root for Purdue. When I watch Purdue play, like I actively like, I love what Painter does. I love what they're about. I love everything about Purdue. That being said, no electric guard on that roster in terms of a Jaden Ivey type of dude.
They like that though. They do,
but you get NCAA tournament, you got to go get one. You got to find a guy who can go get one. Look at last year. Look who won last year, how the Final Four ended up. Colin Gillespie could get you one. Paolo Banchero could get you one. Caleb Love could get you one. Ochai Agbaji, Christian Brown could find ways to get you one. Like, you got to have somebody. I'm not sure Purdue has that. What I will say is I think they're a second weekend tournament team. They're going to beat the heck out of somebody. I don't think it's a Final Four national championship team. I still cheer for them. I just worry because I cheer for them. I cheer for them because I think there's a lot going on in college basketball. There's a lot going on, and there's a lot of different ways to attack. A lot of ways to skin a cat. But I like the way they operate. I like the way Painter coaches his guys. And it's just like they do it the right way in my mind. And I hope that they go do well. But it's just like one of those things where at the end of the day – having a McDonald's All-American helps, like at least on the perimeter. And they just don't have that type of dude.
I don't know.
Yeah. I will tell you this, though. They enjoy playing without Jaden Ivey out there because it got to the point last season where it was a little bit too much like freelance, right? Where it would be like, we're trying to run this. And then Jaden Ivey would just break off the play and go try to get his own. And yes, to a point, you kind of need that guy. But it also was kind of limiting when that guy isn't fitting entirely in with what the offense should be and the way it's clicking right now. Does that make sense? Like, when you look at the best teams that Painter has had, it's just guys that understand exactly what they're supposed to do and exactly how to operate around this monster that they have at the five, right?
Yep.
And the ways that he can kind of create opportunities through people just because of the attention that monster is going to end up drawing from everybody that they end up playing. So I hear what you're saying. I do think that I will say this. I think that they're enjoying playing this year better without having Jaden.
Elite 18.
Yeah, I that's kind of where I'm at with them too, right? When you don't have, if they had even someone like I don't even know if I want to say Carson Edwards, but like someone that was a little bit more experienced in the backcourt, and it could end up being something where like we look really dumb saying this because Fletcher Lawyer ends up being that guy that can go get you a shot. Even if it's something like as simple as just running him off of one of those like the floppy action or a staggered screen, something like that. But I don't know. I think at the end of the day, you need like NBA guys to win a national title. If you go back and look at all the teams that won titles, how many of them have won titles without a whole bunch of NBA guys on the roster? And who on Purdue's roster is an NBA guy?
Like even Zach Edey, I don't know if he ends up like he'll probably play in the like be drafted and someone will take him and be like, yeah, you know what? He can probably do what Bowman does, but I, you know what I mean? Like where are the pros? Fancy, where are the pros?
I don't know. I mean, it's not like Kansas was loaded up with great pros.
Two first round picks.
Yeah, but Ochai Agbaji's not doing anything right now.
First round pick, NBA guy. First team All-American.
So what do you think about Zach Edey's pro prospects? He's 7'4". I mean,
I think someone's going to draft him and use him the way they use Boban, where it's like a kind of a matchup specific, super uber efficient guy against teams where you can use drop coverage. He can get you 15 to 20 minutes here. There's going to be matchups where you can't play him at all. He'll be a useful piece for a matchup specific situation for a smart NBA franchise that needs in like an uber efficient monster guy at the five.
I'm in on him. If you're calling him an Elite Eight team, we don't know who's on the other side of that matchup. Purdue's loss to St. Peter's last year is beyond mind boggling. It's beyond mind boggling.
But it's not.
Yeah, it is.
Sorry. But okay. It so what we agree to disagree, but I'll let you go first. Go ahead.
I think
that sums up this podcast perfectly, right? That loss was mind boggling, but it's not. But it is. But it's not.
I think they're Final Four good. I think that they've got the biggest matchup nightmare in college basketball. And that's exemplified by what we talked about on Field of 68 After Dark. One night after Patrick Young said you got to front, or that you can't front Edey, John Henson says you got to front him. So we got analysts not knowing what's – I asked Rutgers yesterday. I sat in on Rutgers practice. And I asked multiple assistants and Steve Peichel. And if anybody knows, it's Rutgers because they know how to defend. I said, so guys, how would you defend Zach Edey? And every coach had a different answer in how they would do it. In other words, there is not an answer. There is no answer for how you do that. Now you combine, I'm of the belief, and I'm going to die by this time around if I have to die. I'm of the belief that I want a backcourt that coexists, that has multiple guys, that plays well together, and moves the ball. I want that over one otherworldly individual guard who's going to get me that one bucket. I'm going to rely on team basketball, not just because it's team basketball, but because that team basketball, that backcourt, the 33 assists to just 8 turnovers for Ethan Morton, Fletcher Lawyer, and Braden Smith, the way that they have come on, I'm going to rely on that surrounding a 7'4" monster who looks like Yao Ming out there this time around. I think this team is better suited to make the Final Four run in West Lafayette.
Go ahead, Tio.
You make Edey work every possession defensively.
Mm-hmm.
You make him work every single possession defensively. That's what St. Peter's did. That's the reason that wasn't necessarily – a huge surprise. It was a surprise that they beat them, sure, but how they attacked Edey was very different. And St. Peter's wasn't big. So, like, you use him not only in ball screens, but you use him in away screens. The guy he's guarding in away screens because he's not going to get out and show. So, like, if you have guys that can shoot, you're very, very, very vulnerable. And I understand they're number one in KenPom right now in the country. However, it's just what you need guys to – you need a guy that can get you a shot when everything else breaks down. Because NCAA tournament, everybody scouted well. Like, everybody scouted well. Look at the last few national championships. Kansas this year, Ochai Agbaji, Christian Braun, great college players. Baylor, both of those guards, great college players who can go get you one. Virginia before that, Kyle Guy, Ty Jerome, could go get you one. Villanova in 2018.
They had 37 guards. Guys that could go get you one.
North Carolina in 2017, guys who could go get you one. Like, you have to have that one guy that could go get you one.
What news are you breaking here, Fanta?
Joe Lunardi has released a new bracketology.
Oh, my gosh. I'm going to put you on mute. all right.
No, I want Rob Doster's live reaction. Can I get Rob Doster's live reaction?
Who's it? Give me the number one seed. Is UConn the number one seed?
UConn is the number one seed in the East region with a path through Madison Square Garden.
Nope. Don't want it. Don't want it. Send us out west. Send us out west. That's where we operate best, baby.
Don't you love that, T.O.? Don't you love that, T.O.?
I love every bit of it.
Send us west.
Send us out west, baby. That's where we want to be.
T.O., how unbearable is this going to be if – I mean, not, you know, it is – it's great. But if they're going on a deep March run here, just Doster with all this, right?
Yeah.
Hey, look, I'm not going to
be mad. Goodman's going to be mad. Goodman's going to be mad at you because Goodman doesn't like all that. He's like all, you know, he's like he's not a UConn guy. He's not.
No, Goodman hates everything unless he's the one that comes up with it. If it's his idea.
Yeah, that's such a good analyzation right there.
Yeah, unless he comes up with it. If it's his idea, then he thinks it's the greatest thing that's ever happened.
Yes, that's right. That's exactly right.
Yeah, so look, UConn's going to be really good this year. I've made my I've made my peace with the fact that I can't. Last year was kind of a bit, right? Like last year, I was just fucking around. Like, yeah, UConn's going to be awesome. This is why they're the best team in the Big East. And this year, it's kind of like, you know what? I'm going to tone it down because I don't want to be like that super annoying guy. Because if we're being honest, at this point, like UConn's going to be the biggest conversation topic in that conference for like 90% of the weeks that we have, right? They're going to be one of the biggest conversation topics for like 90% of the podcast that we do. So I'm just going to, when you bring it up, let's go for it. Right. But unless it's like they're playing great. In it, you know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
January 7th.
They're going to be a top five team all year, man. Like they're fucking awesome. If you look at KenPom right now, there are two teams in the country that KenPom projects to win every single game this season. That's UConn and that's Texas.
That's crazy, man.
I'm sorry, UConn and Houston. Those are the two teams. No, it's UConn and Texas because Houston is projected to lose to Virginia. They're playing at Virginia. So it's UConn and Texas.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Texas is projected to win every Big 12 game?
Yeah, hold on. Let me bring it up right now. Let me check.
Are you kidding?
Great podcasting right now.
Yeah. So
no, but last four ends. No, they're projected.
Here's what's crazy.
T.O., yes! Yes,
Texas is projected to win.
That's the real one. That's the real reaction. Go ahead.
St. John's last team in, baby.
The last one.
St. John's.
Texas. Want to hear something crazy? Texas is projected to win every single Big 12 game. The one loss that's on their schedule right now at Tennessee.
So St. John's is the last team in. Give me your reaction there.
My reaction? Well, So here's the thing. There's two ways of looking at it, okay? First, I'll give an updated state of the Big East.
All right.
The Marquette, great win last week over Baylor. Marquette looks like a tournament-caliber team. Guys, they were picked ninth. I didn't think that they would be a tournament team with losing Justin Lewis.
Who said they would be?
You did. You did.
I also said Butler would be a tournament team, and I also said Providence would be a tournament team. I also said
Victory Lap Tuesday. Victory Lap Tuesday.
Pump your brakes there. Although I will say, Rob, quietly, I was impressed with Butler last week. I thought they handled Kansas State very. I thought they handled Kansas State well, and I thought Manny Bates. Manny Bates is really a good player. Yes. So, like the one thing about Butler, I would say is. Manny Bates will hang in with Sanogo and with Kalkbrenner so that Butler can at least hang in those matchups because some of these teams are just going to get overwhelmed. If the Big East
Did Ali Butler play?
He just came back. The thing about the Big East is the Big East has not gotten off to a strong start. However, you look at a bracketology and you say, okay, well, five – in an 11-team league, they've averaged about 5.5 to 6 bids. If they still get a path to five, that's not sky is falling. You get five units, that's almost half your league. It's just we had a couple of teams being better than they've been. But when you have, like, that's why Creighton's loss was so weird. If UConn were not what they are, we'd be talking differently. But when you have a great, great team that then elevates others around you. So St. John's is going to be on the bubble the entire year. And let me tell you something.
Because they didn't play anyone in non-conference, man. They played one game in non-conference. That's it. They played one.
But I think that's room. I think that's good for us. I think that's good for us. Their fan base is crazy. We're going to be able to talk about them. They're an interesting team. I don't know. They haven't played anybody. They have DePaul tomorrow night, so they got to win that game.
Mm-hmm.
Conference game.
The biggest issue that the Big East is going to have is that it feels like a lot of their teams are kind of built for getting better later in the season. Like, I think Villanova is going to improve as they get healthy. I think Xavier is going to improve as Sean gets them to actually play a little bit of defense. There's nowhere to go but up for Seton Hall, right? So it's the combination of some teams at the bottom that aren't very good, some teams that got off to a little bit of a slow start, injuries other reasons.
And really sounds like you're talking about the ACC. Kind of the same ordeal.
It's
the
same thing, but it doesn't matter how good you end up being at the end of the season. Once you have all those losses in non-conference, it drags everything else down.
Yep.
So you can't have teams beating each other up in the league. If you want to get six teams in, you need to have a clear line of demarcation between the top six and the bottom five.
But that's why I'm saying to you that even if it's a down year and if you find a pathway to five, that would be a positive for the Big East.
If they get four in, I think it'll be a disappointing year. If they get five in, then I don't think you can really complain about that. Because I also think by the end of the season, once Cam Whitmore gets up and going, once Justin Moore gets healthy, Villanova's going to do enough where they'll be in the tournament. It might be like a playing game kind of a situation, but I think that the name Villanova, and they're going to get enough wins in Big East play just because they're a tough enough team to beat when they're at home. I think that they're going to do enough to get in the dance. Because here's the thing. When you go back and you look at – everyone is going to know those bad losses that they have came without their two best players. And that's going to matter.
Context doesn't matter with these guys.
Yes, it does. With the selection committee, when all anyone's going to talk about is this team that's won two of the last six national titles was missing their two best players.
Wow.
They made the Final Four last year. They're missing their two best players. That's going to be the one that everyone knows about. And I know how difficult it is. It doesn't matter for most of the teams. It's going to matter with Villanova because it's going to be a national talking point. There's no way, if you watch this sport, right, if you pay any attention to college basketball, there's no way not to know that Villanova is missing their two best players. That's going to be a talking point when it comes to, like, because here's the thing, Tio. It's we can say all we want about what like it's supposed to be this, and you're supposed to rank that, and you're supposed to value this, and you're supposed to appreciate this more, or look at these numbers. There are 10 human beings in that room that are making those decisions. And those 10 human beings have no choice but to know that Villanova was missing all of these important pieces throughout the season.
It might be the same 10 human beings that picked the college football playoff.
Exactly.
These dudes don't know who.
If there's one flaw with the way that the tournament setup is it's that it's human beings with inherent biases making these decisions that maybe not know what they're talking about.
They don't know.
We should have just paused it at you saying, if there's one flaw, it's that human beings and just stop right there.
I mean, that's pretty much the story of our planet these days. All right, let's get back on track. You know what, Fancy? I'm gonna jump to the end of the rundown real quick because I know you wanted to talk about Marquette. It was such a weird week for them, man, because they smacked around Baylor when we all thought Baylor was good. Then they lost at home to Wisconsin in a game where they trailed by 16 in the second half, despite the fact that Wisconsin, like Chucky Hepburn, I don't know what was going on with him. Maybe he must have been one of the, you know how soccer players get hurt and they spray that magic spray on them and they come back in the game like they're fine. Chucky Hepburn must have got some of that magic spray sprayed on him in the second half because he was awesome in the first half, missed the first 12 minutes of the second half, then came out and hit like a couple of dagger threes down the stretch of that game. So Marquette lost at home to Wisconsin. Wisconsin was coming off a home loss of their own to Wake Forest. And after Marquette beat Baylor by 26 points, Baylor turned around, gave up 63 points and beat Gonzaga. So Marquette to me is the one team that kind of epitomizes this idea of early season college basketball. Who knows what the fuck is going on?
Yeah. Yes. But the win over Baylor, you might not know what's going on, but you got to get a win at some point. And they did. They did. That has unlimited mileage so that Marquette can feasibly be a team here in the picture that gets 19 wins or 18 wins and says on Selection Sunday, we have a win that you don't have. Mm-hmm. We beat Baylor. And I really think that this is an interesting team because, as T.O. said all summer, Cam Jones is big time. I like the fact that their perimeter shooting – it was good against Wisconsin. They went 9 for 20 from three. their freshmen are coming on a little bit. I mean, they're not playing a ton, but I think that Chase Ross and Sean Jones can both play. They can both play. And David Joplin has developed his game. Omax Prosper had a big-time performance against Baylor. He ended up only going 3-for-11 from the field against Wisconsin. But I like their options. I like that they've got some depth. And they just – Chaka Smart fits with the Golden Eagles. And I think that this team is invested and bought in even more so than last year because these are guys that are just bought in with him. I thought at the end of last year there was a little bit of a divide there by the time the season came to a finish. So to me, they are one of the most fascinating teams. Could they be stuck in an 8-9 game? Absolutely. But do they have the pieces to compete with some of the best teams? They do because of the intensity that they play with. And I want to give huge credit to Wisconsin. And I think Wisconsin could very well hand Maryland their first loss here tonight as we do this show. I think that Greg Gard has done a great job of retooling and reloading and getting this team. A lot of people thought losing Johnny Davis would cause Wisconsin to take a very significant step back. Guys, it's not. Their level of toughness in the road win Saturday, so many teams would have lost that game, and they didn't because Jordan Davis hits a shot. Tyler Wall's invaluable to what they do on both ends of the floor, T.O.
Hey, man, he's a good player. Like, I didn't realize until I saw him in person how good of a player Tyler Wall is. Sorry to interrupt. Keep going.
You're right. I'm done. Right? Like, Wisconsin's reloaded, man.
Yeah, and it's a boring style of play. I get all that, but like they've got some guys that can create some things. The Max Klesmet kid was a good addition, the Wofford transfer. He's been better than advertised, in my opinion, because he does a good job guarding. Like, who made this comment last year watching Virginia Tech? They were like, well, he doesn't look like much. And they were talking about Sean Padula. I can't remember who said it. But like Klesmet kind of has that same like, hey, man, frat boy kind of look to him. But like, man, he competes. He's tough. He can knock down shots, and then Connor Asigian is a difference maker for them when he comes off the bench. Like, Wisconsin has some good players. And I to go back to Marquette, you look at the styles of the two teams, which team's going to be able to impose their will, and sometimes it's just easier to slow things down than it is to speed things up, especially within the flow of a game, because you can walk it up, you can handle pressure if you got one guy. Like, I think stylistically, that's a really tough matchup for Marquette. But Marquette, they've got enough bodies to where – in that Baylor win, in my opinion, guys, was just huge. Like, they get that Baylor win.
Big game Sunday, Marquette at Notre Dame.
Yeah, huge game.
Rivalry renewed. These two have gotten back together. They signed a deal to play each other. I think it's great. Old school Big East. Marquette-Notre Dame is going to be fun. Chaka versus Mike Bray.
Yeah, I like that a lot. And both teams have weapons offensively. Notre Dame doesn't really guard, but
true home and home, too. Fine. Yeah, it's fine. That's awesome. That's a good deal for those two teams.
I want to make one last point on Chaka. Fanny, you talked about this a little bit on, I believe it was the Sunday night show with Goodman and Henson. The fit, I think when it comes to coaching, you need the fit, right? The fit has to be right. And I don't think that Chaka at Texas necessarily fit for a lot of reasons, but when it comes to on the court stuff, what he is so good at, and T.O., you can attest to this, what he is so good at is developing a culture and developing a family atmosphere and building this group of players that stick together for 3, 4, 5 years that have a genuine love and affinity for each other, right? There are people that around that VCU program that are still like probably the best of friends because they played for Chaka Smart in the Havoc years. When he was at Texas, when you're at that program, you have to go out and try to get 5 stars, right? You can't just sit there and get top 75 to top 100 kids and try to build them up over the years and turn them into that family. You have to do it with guys that are going to be there for 8 months. And it's very difficult to develop that same level of culture, that same level of intensity, to get them to buy in and play the way that you want them to play. He's got that going right now with this group. And you know what the most important part is? Everybody that's playing minutes on that team right now is going to be there has at least 3 years of eligibility remaining after this season. Even the guys that are technically juniors that transferred in are going to have a COVID year if they want to take that COVID year. So at minimum, you have this group for this season and next season, and then probably a lot of those same pieces back for another year. So like this is the start to me. And I think that a program like Marquette is similar to a program like VCU in the sense that There is a community within that state that cares very, very deeply about this team, right? It's not at Marquette, you're not second fiddle. Maybe you're second fiddle to the Bucks, and you're probably second fiddle to the Green Bay Packers. But when it comes to college basketball when it comes to college sports at that school, that is what matters the most. So I think that he's going to build Marquette into something. I don't know if he's like winning national titles or making Final Fours with them. He probably shouldn't have made a Final Four at VCU, if we're being honest. Like the way that he wanted to play, they weren't Havoc the year that he made the Final Four. They were like space you out, spread the floor, four around one. They had a 5'7" point guard in Joey Rodriguez that was running. They weren't running Havoc that year. They were out there doing like four around one stuff. So I think that this is the start of Marquette becoming a very good basketball program in that state again. I want to end real quick just on one thing. I think the SEC at this point, to me, it's probably the best conference in the country. They have three of the top 10 teams, four top 20 teams, and six teams in the top 25. Everyone's talking Arkansas. Everyone's talking Tennessee. Everyone's talking about Kentucky. Everyone's talking about all of like the best programs in that league. I want to ask you, T.O., about your boys down there in Starkville, about your mans, Chris Jans, and about the big homie Tolu Smith. Are they for real? Are you buying this?
Hey, you remember at the beginning of the year, I said if Drew Timmy was in the SEC, he'd be Tolu Smith. And it was less.
Do I remember? I remind you that every single day.
Hey, look, I thought the funniest thing I looked up that on KenPom, most was impactful dudes, and Tolu and Drew Timmy's like number three. Tolu Smith's like number seven.
Well, here, no, the KenPom's player of the year rankings. Zach Edey's number one, and it's like not even close, right?
Yeah.
Number two, Jalen Wilson. Drew Timmy's number three. You scroll down that list a little bit, you know who's number nine on KenPom's player of the year rankings? Tolu Smith. Right now, if we ended the season, he'd be a second team All-American.
Yeah.
Just big homie Tolu Smith. He ain't a bad player. I think Robbie Homo owes you an apology. He owes you an apology, right?
No, because what I said was kind of blasphemous, and I kind of understood it because they've been good for a long time. And I understood that it was kind of off the wall. But I think Tolu Smith is a really good player. And one thing that they're still doing that they did last year for Howland is they're boarding. Like, they're number one in the country in offensive rebound rate. 41% of their missed shots are rebounded offensively. 41%. Like, dude, just throw it up there.
Are you shocked? But are you really surprised that a team that's coached by Chris Jans
defends the hell out of it,
and crushes the glass? Like, that is if you ain't tough, you can't play for Jans. And by the way, like, we talk about like coaching fits. Is there a better program for a guy like Chris Jans in a
Mississippi? No, there's not. It's perfect. Like an
underdog where he can juke it up, or he can go get some of these older guys, maybe some guys that wouldn't fit somewhere else. He has a way to connect with people that allows him to get the best out of people from all walks of life. That's right.
And Mississippi State's going to take those guys. Like, without even asking twice, like, hey, we like this kid. Can we make it work? Absolutely. We're Mississippi State, baby. We'll get him in. But he is perfect for that place. Tolu Smith really is a good player. Like, I know I said that kind of tongue in cheek earlier.
He averaged 14-9 last year. Like, you weren't insulting.
Very good. No, yeah, he's a very good player. Funny. I wasn't insulting anybody.
It was a great line.
Hey, look, if Drew Timmy was in the SEC, their numbers would be similar. Let's just call that what it is. But look at the guys that he's playing. Cam Matthews, who's basically a 6'7" bulldog. Like, he's somebody that got minutes last year, but because he provides toughness, Jans is throwing him in there, and he's in, he rebound with his offensive rebound rate is in the top 250 of the country. Like, they have guys that are going to go get it. Mm-hmm. And Shaquille Moore is a terrific athlete. Kamani Hamilton's got talent. Like, they've got people in that system that is going to be good. And because they're going to rely on the offensive glass and on the defensive end, they're going to be a tough out for anybody. Eighth in the nation in defense. Eighth.
Yeah, exactly. Top 10 defense, tops in offensive rebounding. You don't need elite guard play when you've got those things happening. And I'm not saying anything bad about their guards, but let's face it, they don't necessarily have this outstanding offensive player in their backcourt, but they piece it together. They're deep. He's going nine deep. I mean, he's playing a lot of guys. DJ Jeffries is a stable guy for them. He plays about 30, 31 minutes a game. He's scoring in double figures. He's done that in three consecutive games. They've got some depth, and the way that they play is fitting for Starkville. Yeah. I really like this fit. And look, Chris Jans at the end of the day, found a way to lead a team out of the WAC to an NCAA tournament win over the Connecticut Huskies. And he did it on the...
Keep bringing that up, Phantom.
Oh, come on.
And he did it on the other side of the country. I hate to say this, but and again, hope everybody's all right, but how times have changed. How times have changed in New Mexico State in a matter of, 7 months? I mean, that's a really tough situation right now, and frankly, that coaching staff looks bad right now. Yep. Having said this, how times have changed, and Chris Jans was able to do that there. He's going to be able to do this in Mississippi State. So I'll tell you what, the SEC has just chipped and chipped and chipped away. They've gotten better as a league, and certain programs over the offseason said, we got to get these hires right. And I think that this league did a nice job hiring.
Yep. Yep. Last note I want to make about the SEC, and you guys tell me if you think I'm insane here. Arkansas is currently 22-1 to win a national title. Arkansas, when they're at their best, when they have their best five on the floor, has five NBA players on that on the court. They have as much length and as an athleticism as anybody. They probably have minimum three, maybe four, potentially five first-round picks. I think they could even have two top 10 picks on their team in Nick Smith and Anthony Black.
A recipe to win a national championship?
With the transfers, it is.
Yeah, but I do think that when you put Nick Smith out there with Anthony Black, with Ricky Council, with Jordan Walsh, who has no problem doing, like, if Jordan Walsh took no shots and just spent the entire game guarding the other team's best player and going to get off rebounds and being a lob target, Jordan Walsh wouldn't care. Like, he's wired like that, which is why he's a perfect fit for him. Trevon Brazile is a perfect fit for the role that they're being asked him to play, because all he wants to do is catch and shoot threes, catch lobs, and maybe face up and go by somebody once in a while. And then you have three dudes that thrive in these roles that Musk wants them to play, where he just goes and finds whatever the mismatch is and goes to that over and over and over again. If Nick Smith has a mismatch, he's going to get 20 shots this night. If it's Anthony Black, he's going to get 20 shots. If it's Ricky Council, he's going to get the 20 shots. And they have the length and athleticism to be able to guard and be switchable and do all these different things. Unless that thing comes tumbling down, and there's a real chance this year that it kind of does end up come tumbling down. But unless that happens, like, they are to me, the most talented team in college basketball. And I don't know necessarily all that close, and you can get them 22-1 odds right now. To me, that's insane. At BetRivers, 22-1 odds. That means you bet $100, you win $2,200.
That's crazy.
That's not bad. Not bad. Hey, can we go back to Starkville for a second? Because I was part of a team that built a Chipotle down there, so I want to really pour it on thick. So look at their style of play.
Wait, what?
Yep.
You're part of a team that built a Chipotle in Starkville.
Yeah, we built a Chipotle down in Starkville. You're welcome, Starkville. I no longer am part of that Chipotle.
That was so random.
Sold that Chipotle.
And you want to pour it on thick.
I want to pour it on thick. So look at this. Here's the thing.
I'm thinking like the Chipotle sour cream. Go ahead.
It's very good. It's very good. I love Chipotle. But here's the thing, guys. Like, look at their offensive ranking. They're 75th in the country. There's a lot of misses involved when you're the 75th offensive in the country. And you play a slow tempo. You're 340th in the country in tempo. And you're getting 41% of those misses. That is a recipe for success if you're going to play bully ball. Like, I like this Mississippi State team. They could win a game in the tournament. Mm-hmm.
I think they can win. I think that there's the real possibility, if the matchups are right, they can get to a Sweet 16. We've seen Chris Jans pull off upsets before. But listen, we've been here for an hour. We all got stuff to do. I got to get ready to head up to the Jimmy V. I am driving in tonight, Fanta, so send up a few Hail Marys for me that I find the parking garage that will actually be open for 24 hours, so I don't have to sit around outside waiting for somebody to show up at 5 a.m. to let me get my car out. For Terrence Oglesby, for John Fanta. Hey, make sure, if you're still here, fieldof68.shop, check out our merch store. We got a bunch of new stuff dropping this week. Also, make sure that you subscribe to the daily Field of 68. It's the Field of 68 daily.beehive.com, whatever it is, linked in the description below. Best place for you to get your updates every single day on college basketball. So for Terrence Oglesby, for John Fanta, my name is Rob Dosser. This has been the DTF Podcast.